Hey readers, welcome to the Little Press Playlist, where we discuss books from small independent publishers and their musical pairings. I'm your host, Kira Cusick. In this episode, we're going to be talking about Searching for Nora, which was published in 2019 through Peavine Mountain Press. At the end of Henrik Ibsen's play, A Doll's House, Nora walks away from her family and her comfortable life. She has little money and few legal rights, making her journey towards freedom all the more difficult. Her experiences impoverish her and land her on a rough Minnesota prairie. Meanwhile, in 1918, Nora's granddaughter Solvi is unraveling the radical feminist mystery that her grandmother left behind. I was lucky enough to sit down with the author, Wendy Swallow, to discuss the narrative, her writing process, and her thoughts on the characters.
Well, I've been haunted by Nora Helmer for a long time. I remember first reading the play while I was in college, and I saw it at about the same time. And of course, you know, like everyone in the audience, especially all the young women, and I cheered as she went out the door. But then I saw Doll's House again about 15 years later when I was in the middle of divorcing my first husband, and I had two little kids, just like Nora has little kids. And when she went out the door, I just felt this knot in my stomach, and I thought, oh my goodness, you know, is this an act of liberation or is this an act of suicide? Is this, you know, given her time and place, what does she have? Because I realized that separating from my husband when my kids were little was the hardest thing I'd ever tried to do, and it was damn near impossible. But, you know, I had a good job, one that I wouldn't lose if I, you know, if I did this. I had the support of family and friends. I had the rights to care for my children, to have my own bank accounts, to get a mortgage for a different apartment. I had all these advantages that Nora would not have had. And I didn't really fully understand how limited her rights were in 1879.
As you can imagine, constructing this kind of historically based narrative requires a deep understanding of the time period. In her search to understand the conditions Nora would have been subjected to at the time, Wendy did an extensive amount of research, including speaking with Ibsen specialists and historians in Norway, as well as working with the Norwegian archives in Minnesota.
My husband and I went to Norway for about a week, and we were tempted, of course, just to be tourists, but we had a strict schedule, and I'd set up interviews with various people in Norway. The Norwegians were incredibly generous with their time and expertise, and I was particularly interested in talking to Ibsen scholars because I wanted to understand better both Ibsen's day and time and Ibsen's motivations for Nora. Like, what did he mean by this play? What did he say? And I'd read the biographies of him, but it was really wonderful to talk with the Norwegian scholars who, of course, have delved pretty deeply into this. So then I also was interested in talking with the immigrant historians who could explain to me this incredible diaspora of Norwegians to North America, which I didn't really fully appreciate until I was in Norway. And when you're in Norway, this topic comes up a lot. Many Norwegians have relatives that live, you know, came over in the 1890s and have lived here ever since, and they go back and forth. And some have relatives who went to America and then came back. And so this is a very rich history. And the great thing about the Norwegians, it's a fairly small country. And I mean, it has a fairly small population, and they all know each other. So I'd made a few appointments, and the very first appointment I went to, which was with a historian, a 19th century sort of social cultural historian at the library there, at the National Library. And we talked for a few minutes. She goes, "Oh, you know who would love to be in on this conversation?" She calls like five other people. They show up. They're like right around the corner, right, in Oslo. And my husband, fortunately, also a former journalist, had his computer open, and he just typed like mad while we had this sort of free-ranging conversation. It was great. And a couple of them were Ibsen scholars, and one of them was a woman who ran the the Center for Ibsen Studies in Oslo at that point. And the cool thing about her was she was writing, just about finished a biography of Ibsen's wife, Susanna Ibsen, who's a really important figure in his life and was sort of the font, her life and the experience of, she came from a sort of patched together family. She had a couple sisters, she had some half-sisters, and I think she even had some stepsisters. Anyway, there were all these women in Susanna's life. She had a broad range of sisters and relatives, female relatives, and Ibsen was fascinated by how their lives unfolded, depended entirely on whether they married and if they married well. And he was quite sort of shocked by that, to witness it. And so the other great thing about Astrid's work, this woman's name was Astrid Sather, her work with Susanna Ibsen was she totally understood what Nora's experience would have been like as a bourgeois woman in Norway at that time. So, you know, what kind of education did she have? And what would have been her prospects for employment after she leaves Torvald, her husband?
While there is so much texture given to Nora's perspective, she's not the only point of focus in this novel. After Nora disappears to America, her actions of leaving her family become infamous in Norway. But because of the shame that Torvald felt, the truth of what really happened to her was buried and she became a mystery for public speculation. That is where Solvi, Nora's unknowing granddaughter, comes in. She's attending university and learning more about the Forgotten One, a feminist icon that she later finds out is her long-lost grandmother. Her story runs in tandem to Nora's.
So I spent about 5 years writing the Nora story, and then I wrote the Solvi story, and spent 3 or 4 years sort of creating that. And it was harder because I had to figure out what really would drive the characters. It was clear to me with Nora what would drive her, but I had to sort of create all that for Solvi. And I was, at first the first version of the Solvi story, when I felt like I had it in place and I put it, all the way along I was, braiding it together with the Nora story, but I finally started looking at the Solvi story just as its own story for a bit, and I realized, there wasn't enough that was difficult in Solvi's life. It was too easy. Like things, so I had only one boyfriend, like Magnus shows up in like the second chapter and okay, that was nice and pat. But I realized, well, wait a minute, she has very little experience of young men. So, why does she get to be lucky and find the
perfect guy? Right, she's bound to meet a bad one.
right. So she meets Dominic, so he's entrancing because he's really smart. And challenging to her. And she seems to like challenging people. So her friend Rika, who is much more evolved, shall we say, in her feminism at that point, and how she feels about authority, and she's trying to get Solvi to sort of cast off her bourgeois, advantages and sort of start to live a scrappier life.
I don't think I could have picked a better book to talk about on our first episode. I may be biased because I generally love historical fiction, but Searching for Nora explores themes of class, feminism, and early migration in a really interesting way by telling the story of both Nora and Solvi simultaneously, as well as by taking an already iconic character of Henrik Ibsen's and imagining a completely unique identity for her that is both inspirational and at times crushingly realistic. I really couldn't put it down. And now for the playlist. At the end of every episode, I'll run through my favorite tracks on the playlist, which you can later find in its entirety on the Little Press Playlist Spotify page. For Searching for Nora, I went for strong themes of independence, feminism, and motherhood, highlighting both the light and dark sides of those concepts. So first up on the playlist, I had to start with Liability by Lorde because I really think this speaks to Nora's character in general. But next up, we get a little bit more specific. I put Alaska by Maggie Rogers, which I think speaks specifically to Nora's first experiences in America and this idea of walking off her old self and becoming someone new. My third favorite on the playlist is Slipping Through My Fingers by ABBA. I think this really speaks to Nora's relationship with her children back in Norway and how she mourns the loss of time with them. And my last favorite is The Last Great American Dynasty by Taylor Swift. In this song, she's kind of chronicling these past women whose paths she's intersected with over time, but she's never actually met. And I think that this really speaks to Solvi's story and her search for her long-lost grandmother. Thanks for listening to the Little Press Playlist. I'm your host, Kira Cusick, and I'll see you next time.